Yeah, I'm not a HUD guy at all. I did way back in the day. Mintz, did you?
Yeah, so I would do HUDs when I was playing like the two monitors and playing like eight games.
Yeah, me too.
The HUD thing is needed because like what I would do, I'd have two 24-inch monitors, and the ones that were on the right were the big buy-ins, and the ones I was deep in, and the ones on the left were just starting, and I wasn't even fucking watching them. And so I needed the HUDs for those, the ones that I wasn't paying attention to at all. And then you just... But when you play like one or two tables or three and you're focusing on it, you don't really need it because you're paying attention to the game flow. But when you're playing seven or eight, you know.
Yeah, I just, I found starting off playing this these PA hick sites that I could essentially every single time have the nuts going in the river and I'm you know, first action, I could check and they would always bet and I could always come over the top. The last like few times I played, everyone's just checking and checking with like hands.
Yeah, I mean, people that you play a lot of hands with, they'll start getting those stats on you. And I was the same way.
Yeah, that PA is not that big of a size. Right, you're playing the same people all the time, so your dynamics are picking up.
When I was grinding, you know, 220s and 440, 180 mans, when I was playing 14 tables at a time, I used a HUD because it was the same regs over and over and over again. But now that I'm playing like, you know, two tables.
And you're not playing all the time either, so you're not getting all that data.
Now, I would say get one. Yeah. I think it can only help because you start seeing like, okay, this guy's three bet percentage is crazy low, so he's probably nutted when he's three betting, or his three bet percentage is crazy high, so he can be looser, blah, blah, blah. It definitely helps. I think sites should ban them. Because
I definitely think so. I didn't think they were legal before, but
exactly. Some sites have banned them. Some sites haven't. I think I like the idea of them, I guess, but it should either be built into the software so everybody has it.
Yes,
because it definitely helps players who spend a ton of time studying it and blah 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 blah. And I think it hurts the overall poker ecosystem where weaker players or people who don't even know they exist. Mm. Like honestly, I didn't even know they existed for the first like 4 years I was playing poker. Yeah. So I think they should get back to just old school, just, you know, no HUD, just follow gameplay, et cetera.
Yeah. I'm going to have to start being reckless, just start whipping it out.
You don't have to do that.
Everyone. Well, I am, because I do need to switch it up because it is becoming a pattern. Yeah. I had trips and a guy had kings and, you know, no ace on the board and he didn't bet the river. And he's just like, okay,
your ass
something's
up. Red, bro.
Something's up. Something's up on like a 10-6-4-2 board.
Has anybody called out your screen name, like tweeted at you or anything?
You're still
under the radar. I'm waiting for it to happen.
Yeah.
Damn.
They're good screen names.
Yeah, I know. I almost said it just now.
Because I'm just waiting for
the fact nobody knows that it's you. Is your brand not strong enough that people don't immediately know that's you? Because they should.
I think it might be. Kind of. I don't know. But it's obvious once you see
it. I will say this. I didn't even know that was your screen name. And then when you play WSOP PA, and I was just scrolling the updates, and I saw it, I just cracked up to myself. I was like, I'm not going to say it out loud because I do think it's funny that it's out there, but not. Yeah. But if you wanted to snoop, you could kind of find it if you wanted to, because it's so obvious once you see it.
Oh, yeah.
It's very, very funny.
Yeah, when I first started getting back into it, I would, and granted, I was doing better than I am now. I would win a pot and somebody would call me a fish or whatever, and just all caps, I would just go all hail and then my screen name. I imagine it just would piss people off.
I want you to make it public eventually, but yeah. I like now that it's not. It makes me laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully I got a few more days left of the wife and kid being in the Outer Banks.
So you're just grinding all the sites right now?
Well,
wife, no kid, you do have the dog.
Yeah, I do have the dog. Dog is ACL.
All right.
So injury. So I had to stay back with the dog, which obviously I wanted to be on vacation with the wife and kid and the in-laws.
Of course.
Yeah, not staying back playing poker. With
no,
the dog.
No, God, no, you hate that.
No. So I was all excited this weekend, specifically Sunday, be like, okay, this is the first time I have a little bit of a bankroll. I can, you know, 5, 6, 7 table it, the main sites, and get after it. But my issue is, since I've become a father, I can't sleep past 7:30 in the morning.
Oh, and you relate to that?
Mm-hmm. I just can't. And I knew that going into Sunday. So I knew that if I were to get up on Sunday with nothing to do, like I'm not going to like work out or go play basketball, I'd just be anxious at 7:30 till 4 o'clock when the tournament start. So naturally, I did the smart thing. I got blacked out on Saturday night.
There we go.
Stayed up till 4 o'clock in the morning and expected to sleep naturally until like noon.
Yeah.
Get up, get a nice breakfast, shower, and let's go. Let's start cooking. Blacked out at 4, woke up at 7:30.
Oh,
that's
no.
worse. The hangover wakes you up.
It was bad. And then you had the scaries all day, and still played the tournament, so I was anxious, I was tired. It was a bad scene overall.
I mean, you being a father is the best thing to ever happen to me because I hear stuff like that, and I just cannot imagine my life waking up at 7:30 every morning, like Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, it's usually earlier, but 7:30 is just the pinnacle.
Do you get like phantom like senses, like I need to go change a diaper, and then you remember like, oh wait, they're not here.
You just got up, and I got up, and the second I knew I was up, I just got pissed, and then that was it. Then I couldn't go back to sleep. I couldn't do anything, and I tried.
Could not be more different than my life right now. Just could not be. I'm such a piece of shit sometimes that I won't get out of bed till like 4 p.m. on a Saturday or Sunday. I'm like, all right, time to start my day. It's 4 p.m.
I woke up at 6 on Friday, and it just ruined my entire weekend.
6 p.m.?
No, 6 a.m.
A.m.?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just never recovered from being up before the sun.
Sorry for not sounding like that surprised that it's 6 p.m.
No, he's a hardworking guy around here. How different is life being married with a kid compared to like 28-year-old Smitty? It's just two different people.
Oh, it's obviously two different people. It's just obvious. And it's nothing bad. It's right. Just different. But that's where with weeks like this, I'm not happy that I can't be on vacation with the wife and kid and in-laws.
Because you wish you could help take care of the kids so wife could, you know, enjoy some time. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, you know, consolation prize, looking forward to grind a little bit all week.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think it plays into like the renaissance of your love for poker?
It does, but I'm not in game shape to grind all week. So, I mean, just mentally, like trying to go every night and like it's felt forced and I haven't been playing as good.
It's impossible to win in poker when your mind's not, especially tournament poker. Because it's one thing to do the cash game thing when you can like pop in for an hour or two. Mm. But like to win in tournament poker, I mean, if your mindset's not totally like, I've got these hours blocked out, I'm mentally ready, you're not thinking about yourself, you're not going to win.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a real thing.
Exactly. So I'm going to take at least tonight off, maybe tomorrow night, and get back on it Thursday and Friday.
I learned when I was in Manchester and, you know, just trying to play professionally is at night, I would just get so tired and like start dozing off in my chair. I would move my laptop to like the kitchen table bar kitchen area and stand up and play because you can't fall asleep while you're standing up. And Jake, who, by the way, he's not here today. He had something going on, but he'll be back next week. Jake bought a standing desk for that same reason.
Smart.
And so he doesn't stand the whole time, like all day. But if he's starting to get a little tired, but say some fish sat him at 5:10 or whatever, and he has to play, he'll stand up.
Yeah, but it's not even about being tired. It's about kind of moving around. Yeah. It's being into it. Yeah. It's switching.
I would always, and y'all aren't going to be surprised because y'all know me on this, but man, I always would just stream concerts or listen to live concerts while I was playing poker. But it would help me because the flow of I wouldn't like change. I just let the concert go. I wouldn't even know what was playing. And the flow of the music would help my like mental flow with poker. It would go together. And that would keep my energy up, especially if I was playing at like 4 a.m.
Do you do the same live?
Perfect
question. Yeah. We get this question a lot in DMs. Do you listen to music when you play live? And I know, Smitty, you don't.
I try not to, but sometimes I have to just to break up the monotony or to calm me down.
Yes. Mm-hmm. 100%
same as me. If I'm on tilt, I need to put something in.
I try not to because I'm worried that I'll just not pay attention or action will be on me and I'll have no idea what's happening around. But I have, and that's where I was going to segue into what you just said. I'll put on like a concert or something and it calms me. So are you full-time headphones on at the table?
Not full-time. A lot of times I'll put one earbud in. I mean, I believe in table talk and live poker. I think that people that are full-time earbuds in, you get a lot of info off these people just conversating, like figuring out what they do, what walk a lot. Because poker's all educated guesses, literally.
Sure.
And so the more information you have to make your educated guess, the better. And so a lot of times you can figure out what people's jobs are. Or, you know, do they play for a living? Are they some rich real estate guy in there screwing off? And so all that matters. The thing with the music for me is when you're playing tournaments, live tournaments especially, and I'm really talking about post dinner, when you've played like 6 hours and you've had an hour or two dinner break, I'm cranking up the tunes late night for that 10 p.m., 11 p.m., midnight, because I always found one of my biggest edges, I go on late night heaters all the time because these old guys that are in there, man, they can't see straight. When they're 80 or 70 years old, you've been playing 10, 11 hours. It's midnight. You're not bagging until 1, 2 a.m. And that's when I turn up the heat a lot.
Yep.
And so I'm just rocking out, cranking it late at night with that energy. And so
back when you were drinking late night cocktails?
Beer level would be the last level, but I wouldn't get super bombed because alcohol at the table for me would make me just angry when I lost more. Mm-hmm. I'd lose control of my emotions and just all that. But I'm always all about the high energy late because you got to keep that energy up because in those tournament poker days, especially the main event, 2 hour levels, it is a long, long freaking day.
I think one of the best live poker edges is recognizing, and I've been on both sides of this, recognizing who wants to bag and just wants to get to the next day and who's playing to win. And you can, if you're doing table talk, and that has a lot, you can build and build and build and then become cognizant of who here needs to bag, like needs to move on to tomorrow, which I've been in that situation where I folded, like, I think I told the story, maybe episode one, like I folded like pocket nines, like, you know, at towards the end of the day to a guy that was open shoving every hand because he was going to rebuy the next day no matter what. I wasn't. So I had to bag. And I think he knew that.
Yeah.
So he had an edge on me there. And I've also been on the opposite side where I've realized like, ooh, I'm at like a pretty bad table who they just, they're all, you know, like, where are you staying? Like, what hotel are you staying at? Oh, yeah, I hope I come back tomorrow. And then you can just bully those people and you can pick up the table talk like, be a real shame if you didn't move on to day two, right, bud? And they're like, yeah, I really want to make
it. A lot of people, it's funny too, the people that are married that are trying to bag, they don't want to tell the wives that they busted at the end. They want to be like, you know, when you have to tell the wife that you're putting in 2 days, you can't come in at 1 a.m. like, honey, I played 14 hours and did not spend my day with you and lost. Even if you've got seven big blinds going in a bag, you can show something.
Yep.
And, you know, I know that's a real thing. You can look for wedding rings at the table on that and be like, oh, this dude's like got to tell his wife he's got to make day two.
Plus so there's chipping a chair, baby.
I mean, another night in a hotel is better than going home to the wife at 2 a.m. who's been changing diapers and you have nothing to show for it.
Poker's tough on the poker's a hard hobby on relationships because it just takes so much damage.
And it's expensive, dude.
But I mean, it's just the time commitment.
I told you about when I took my now wife to Vegas 2 years ago for the World Series of Poker, and I told her going into it, and like, hey, like, we have to do this stuff for work, but like the tournaments that we're actually playing, like I'll have the nights, but during the day it's going to be like 12 hours. She's like, oh, it's fine. I'll go to the spa. I'll go to the pool. I'll hang out. I swear to God, 2 hours into the first tournament, I get the text, I'm bored.
Now we're at first level still, honey. Yeah, right. You know, like at least late to level four to bitch at me.
Lines are 25-50 and I'm 30K here. Like, what do you want me to do? And that affected my psyche. I'm like, well, I can't like.
Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah, man. I can't sit here for hours and hours and hours. And I did and busted. Yeah. And then it was just all lose-lose.
And then everybody was miserable.
Yeah. Well, that's the worst part. Like, now you're the guy who just busted the tournament. You're mopey. You're going back to the bored wife who like wants to like go to dinner or whatever, and you can't ever take a second for your damn self.
I have one funny story about wearing headphones. There was a time I was in a pod. I had headphones in. I think I was listening to like a Jon Snow Game of Thrones montage, like really zoning in.
I love that.
And I had a combo draw, like massive flop. I get to the river. It bricks out. And I'm sitting there on the river with headphones in, and I tank and end up firing like three quarters pot. Very sizable bet, and it just gets snap called, and like the table's like laughing.
Why?
And I was just like, "What?" I take out the headphones. Apparently, it was an older, pretty nice guy, and he had just said at the river when I was tanking. He was like, I'm calling whatever you bet.
And you had the nuts?
No.
No,
you had
nothing.
I had the queen high.
Oh, God.
He had said, I'm calling whatever you bet. I didn't hear him. I have headphones in. I fire like 375 snap call. I was like, oh.
So that is a lesson. Like,
yeah.
That is one of the
keep one earbud in.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of, a lot of people do the one earbud now. Because
then you're still not totally zoned out. But then a lot of times, I don't know about y'all, man. Sometimes you get at tables where people are being pretty damn annoying, especially in the South.
Yeah.
Where people, I mean, y'all deal with me already. Everybody in the South could tell you their life story when you meet them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes at the table, there are people you like to do that, and there are people you don't. And so you got to have the headphones to just get away from some of that stuff sometimes.
That's another live tell is the people who are making the really bad, lame jokes at the table are generally bad poker players. And you can sometimes like engage with them and kind of like egg them on a bit because, you know, like the happier you keep them, maybe they'll call you up late or this or that. Mm-hmm. So
or they'll let you go.
Yeah. Like there's a big dynamic there where you can really, you don't want to like zone those people out because keeping the fish happy is how you make money.
And then also, and this goes farther, like, and it's different. It's fascinating in poker because it's different economies all over the country, but in the South, there's so few pros and you're dealing with all these older guys that are retired and stuff. They don't want to come in there and play with the kids with the big bows on and the sweatpants and the flip-flops. That makes them not like poker. Like, they're old, they're retired, they're going in there to have a good time and be recreation. So, of course, I'm going to be nice to them and mess with them and have fun with them. They're there to entertain themselves. You go in there and bash their heads in there, and you're a dickhead to them, it's going to make them not want to come back. And then, you know, it's not good for the poker economy.
I hear the argument of banning headphones and sunglasses at the table. WSOP tournament tables, at least I think that they have said no headphones in the money.
Yeah, man, money's not in the main. You can't.
In the main? That's not all tournaments, though, right?
Oh, just really?
The
main. How about they don't want you in the main money? Yeah. I don't like, man.
When did that happen?
A few years ago.
This is a while ago.
But I do think they should do
it. I mean, it makes sense because I've never made the money. So.
I would like that across all tournaments. Like, before the money, whatever. After the money, I would like to see headphones.
No, is that
the headphones thing doesn't bother me near as much as the sunglasses.
Is that more sunglasses, so they just don't want people are bitches. Since it's on TV, they don't want people just sitting there in silence.
I think there's a lot of that.
And I don't know how they're going to enforce this with people who like elect to wear masks at the table.
To wear them now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you're talking about my mask that I'm going to end up wearing during the match.
Oh, no. I'm talking about an actual mask. Cause I think like that's going to cause more issues than
like you talked about before, the people that like to announce their bets.
Exactly. I'm a big announce bet.
Yeah. And like, you know, you throw in the overstock, you know, you throw in a 5K chip and say 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
always that's going to be a big one. Ask for clarification to the dealer.
Like, yeah, because there's definitely a lot of room for angle shooting.
Oh, a ton now. Yeah. I mean, I've told this story before.
Reason not to ever do headphones.
I didn't even have headphones on when I won the big 50 when I finished 529th. I thought a guy said all in, and so I folded, but I clarified with the dealer, like, wait, did he just say all in? The dealer would have said no, and I would have gone all in, and I would have cracked aces, ironically enough, with my king 10 and doubled up. But I didn't even have headphones on. The guy mumbled something that I thought was all in. It wasn't even that. And so I fucked myself there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they are going to require masks?
I don't.
You don't?
I read something that if the state of Nevada requires vaccines, which WSOP is doing, then they don't have to require masks, which I think is a fair compromise.
I think so as well.
Yep. Did we talk about it last week? Like, WSOP has now said you have to be fully vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And a guy,
that broke in between.
I've gotten to become friendly with this. He's like an ACR pro, he's a poker guru. He's a pretty good player. And he tweeted, he's like, hey, you know what? I like playing poker and the WSOP more than I care about this freaking shot. I'm going to go get the vaccine. Cause he was, you know, he's like one of those guys. Like, I guess he's somewhat healthy. Like, he's like, I don't really want the vaccine. Like, if I get it, I'll immunity, blah, 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 blah. But he was like, I don't know. I've put so much worse in my body that like, what's the worst this vaccine could possibly do?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people will come around to that side of it. It's like, fuck, I just want to play WSOP.
Yeah, I would elect taking the vaccine more than medication for horses so that deworms them.
People were asking what, you know, percentage field won't be there. And we're not going to talk about vaccines anymore. You know, I think that ship has sailed. I would say maybe 5% difference, but I think it'll...
The problem more is the international traveling part is going to be... That's what's going to hurt the fields more than the vaccine stuff. It's
I'll say what? Less Europeans there, you know, whatever.
Like, you're not going to have as many 25-minute hands.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I can go without them tanking for 10 minutes.
Yeah, like look down at my hand at 1-200 and sit there with a scar for 4 minutes before figuring out to open or fold. I'm just like, dude, you could bet, right? You could.
We found Ben Mintz's number one.
I can't lose Europeans.
Idiots from Northern Europe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just the thing. The tanking in live poker drives me insane. And don't get me wrong, you know, like once a tournament, I'll have a big decision on the river that may take me a couple of minutes when it's a big all-in or whatever.
I have a question for you guys. Have you ever called the clock on anybody?
Yeah, I do it all the time. I think people's time. Look, I don't call clock. If somebody doesn't take long and they have a big decision, then like, you know, every now and then, you know, if somebody's facing a big decision on the river and they haven't tanked all day, I'm never going to call the clock on them. If it's for their life, deep in a tournament, it's in the money.
Right.
But there are certain people that are habitual problems. Yes. And you know it. And they take 20 seconds to decide they're going to... Like, poker is simple. You can fold, you can call, or you can raise. You can do three freaking things. It should not take 10 minutes. And I just think it's a matter of, like, personal respect. Like, we're all sharing the same world and space. You know, a lot of people think they're more important than others, but we all kind of aren't. And so we should be more respectful. And, like, the biggest guy, that Jordan Christos, is the biggest one. JC and Blue, the guy who's notorious for tanking. Like, if we ever
have... Call him out!
No, but I'm just saying, like, it's like a huge thing. Like, you know, if we ever have... I don't know if we're going to allow that if we ever have any tournaments.
No,
in fact, I know we're not.
Absolutely.
JC, this is why my angle on this is the best. I am not a clocker. I've never called a clock on anybody ever. But I will find the Ben Mintz at the table who is agitated by everyone and looking at me like,
yeah,
buddy, what are you going to do? And then they'll call the clock and look like a dick.
Ben, so... Is it only if you're in the hand or
if you're a clocker, you're a clocker.
I'm with him in that for the most part. It's when there's somebody who will tank 2 to 3 minutes every single time, every hand. It's like,
exactly.
This is such like a marginal, like, you know, like it's a normal pre-flop spot. Like, are you going to fold or raise? Like, what are you doing? Like, you shouldn't take 3 minutes every single time. So then you start looking around at the table like, what's this guy doing?
I'll never call the clock on someone, though, that's got, like, if someone doesn't tank a lot and they're facing a freaking huge decision deep in a tournament, I'm never going to call the clock on them in that spot.
I'm gonna
ever. There are habitual offenders who deserve to be punished and called out because they're just not more important than everyone else.
In all honesty, every time I take, you know, 4 minutes to make a decision, and I'm trying to like run through the action in my head. Like, I know I'm not really learning anything in my
four
head.
4 minutes. Are you really taking 4 minutes for a decision?
I did during WSP last year. A guy put me all in for my tournament life on the river, and I had a single pair on like a pretty connected board. And I said, like, just give me a minute. Like, I'm just going to think about this.
That a lot.
But by like, you know, second 45.
I'd say like every decision I've ever made has at least been made up probably within first 30, probably 60 seconds.
I took a little extra because it was for my tournament life, but I know during like the third minute, I was certainly not like going through the hand and figuring anything out. I was like, do I really want to bust right now? Like, could he actually have it? And I ended up calling and being right. But if I was wrong, I was like, at least I spent a little extra time thinking about it. It was more for my own like happiness. Like, I'm just glad I thought a little more through, even if nothing really was happening in my brain anyway.
Well, it's also important to like when the turn passes, you should be thinking like what you're going to do on certain cards and stuff.
Well, yeah, so that's the online pro versus live pro thing.
Dude, I just
like online pros are already like are making betting the flop, thinking about what they're going to do on the turn. Mm-hmm. And these live guys, they don't, they're just thinking about that's one of the
It was one of those weird things. I just assumed river would go check, and he bombed river. I was like, oh, where did that come from? And the reason I called was, I was like, yeah, when I punt, I bluff like that. And that was my thought process for calling. It was like, I do stupid shit like that all the time. I call. Yeah. And that was like, he was like, what did you think? Like, what combos did you put me in? I was like, buddy, I didn't put you on anything. I was just like, yeah, that's something dumb I would do. That's why I called.
Just a dunk shot.
Yeah, and it worked. Like, just shoving river. Like, that's a stupid thing I've done before.
One thing I want to say is today's Tuesday. We're taping this on Tuesday, August 31st. Guys.
Episode 97.
97, but we're 1 month away.
Yeah.
I mean, Nate and I sit by each other here, and we're just like, holy crap, the World Series of Poker is a month away.
I do
it's
believe
just like snuck up on us here.
I think, and Smitty, I'm going to rope you into this. I think I'm flying out September 31st, a month from today.
Or there's no 30. There's 30 days.
September 30th. September 30th.
Jesus Christ.
I don't know. Months. Have you had the discussion?
I do know there might be something going on at home for an Eagles game on October 3rd, which could throw a wrench in the early situation. But I had been working hard for at least the main at the end.
I would love if we were staggered, like if I was out there first week and then you were out there like second week.
You see, I'd rather go off for once. When's the tag team?
Tag team's the I think it's before the main.
Right.
I think it's right Halloween. Before. I think it was like it might be the Halloween Sunday.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be $1,000 tag team.
Three tournaments I'm eyeing up. The main one, obviously. Number two is the all in. So if I go out early, it would be like around October 10th. Happy birthday, Nate.
Thank you.
And then the third would be the tag team.
So tag team is Sunday, October 31st.
Halloween.
And that's Halloween. And then there
that'd
is
be a great warm-up for the boys.
If we played that, we could dress up on Halloween for the tag team event.
I have a good mask.
That'd be pretty funny.
I have a great
That would work out perfectly if we could do that.
And then Monday, November 1st is the $600 Deep Stack Championship No Limit Hold'em. That might be massive.
Question about the tag team. Is the buy-in individual or is it combined?
It's combined.
I believe it's a combined 1K.
That might be a must, like three bullets from us.
I feel like we should dress up as like our favorite WWE tag team. Like goes like the Road Warriors or DX.
It's like, well, you and me goes the Bushwhackers.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. We could go in character on Halloween.
I always
got to
be the little fella. I always got to be. I
always confused you with fucking Andre the Giant.
I was like, can I be Andre the Giant one time in this fucking world? Golly. I'll be Doink the Clown. It's fine.
But I was looking at the schedule I was looking at, because I want to go. Nate and I have been talking a bunch just off topic. And we want to go out there at the beginning, and it could coincide with Cracking Aces 100th episode with the start of WSOP. Mm-hmm. I think that's a phenomenal opportunity for this brand. And I want to do that. The reunions of 500, 5 million, right?
Yes, sir.
And then wanted to play that, probably fire a couple of bullets at that. Then Monday is a 600 deep stack. And then Tuesday is a 1K Super Turbo Bounty, which I love the words turbo. So
super Turbo Bounty.
It's all words.
So the Super Turbo Bounty is a one-day event. It's a $1,000 total buy-in, and every player is a $300 bounty. 20-minute levels, 20,000 starting stack. I mean, it's going to fly. It's awesome. I believe it's a freeze out. No, one re-entry. Nope. It doesn't even say.
Regardless, they're doing a bunch of freeze outs this year, I saw. But I want to go.
I like
out.
That.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
I mean, yeah, that's better for you guys.
It is a freeze out. It is a freeze out. I think that's probably the coolest tournament besides the main.
Which one is that?
That is the Super Turbo
Bounty.
Bounty.
What about what day is the flip?
It's like a fucking Saturday morning action.
Yeah, I don't think I can stay out there until October 10th, which is my birthday. That is on Sunday, October 10th, the flip and go.
I'm thinking, Nate, like we were talking about, go out beginning, probably fly out there that Thursday night, fire the Friday, fire all the way through this 1K Super Turbo Tuesday, and then go back out there around Halloween till the main. Because look, there's no way in hell I could just show up to the main right now after not playing live poker for basically 2 years and expect to do anything.
Yep.
I got to get out there and play some of these smaller events. I'm going to play the I'm going to play the $250 daily probably a couple times too. If I bust some of these, I'm going to play some sit and goes, some megas. Cause you got to get, like you said, got to get in game shape. I just can't show up to a 10K when I haven't played 2 years and expect to be good. So I want to go out there that first trip, play some of the smaller buy-ins, and then just get into it for Barstool. We could blog it, video logs, all that. So
it'll
be fun.
So I did put on the Instagram, we were going to ask Mincy some questions, get to know him a little better today. So we can run through some questions right now, Ben Mincy.
Fire away, boys.
So I like this question. This is from Kevin. He said, what was Ben Mincy's first big score/moment that made him think he could pursue a career in poker?
Oh, that is a very one of the ones that's painted in my mind. I believe it was April 10th, 2006. So I got into poker like everybody. We talked about with Chris Moneybagger, played $5 games in the frat house for like 2 years. I play like 3-6 limit in Tunica, Mississippi at the Gold Strike, and play $5 sit and goes and $10 sit and goes on party poker. you know, just broke, but like loved it. Just that's all. I couldn't read enough. I couldn't, you know, all I cared about was poker. And I play a $22 tournament on Party Poker one night. And I literally had like never made a final table before. This is probably the eighth tournament I ever played. It was a $22 40K. It started at like 9 or 9:15. There were 2,300 people in it. And I remember I get down to the final three and I bust somebody tens to ace nine. It was nice. A super key hand and I win it. And it was $22 buy-in. I had $200 to my name and I won $10,000.
Sick.
And I was 23 years old.
That'll get you.
Yeah. I thought I was a freaking millionaire. And I remember the funniest thing was the next day when I called my mom to tell her about it. My mom was a big shot attorney, sent me through private schools and stuff. This was, I mean, she was as upset as I've ever heard. She knew exactly where this was going when I won this thing. But like when I had, you know, when you're a broke college kid, you get a hold of 10K and 10K is still a lot of money. I'm not saying it's not, but you know, it ain't going to last you living in New York, especially. Right, yeah. But I thought I was a millionaire. So that moment when I won that 10K, I was like, we got to see where this thing goes. And that was back in April of 2006. And that was definitively when I won the $22 40K on Party Poker, the moment that started me.
And that's when you started playing more tournaments?
Oh, yeah, immediately. And then I started playing the tournaments up in, you know, Tunica a lot because I was an hour from Ole Miss. And yeah, man, that was the definitive moment on that front, though.
So let's segue that. Will says, what's the biggest cash game pot you've won?
I won in Harrah's New Orleans. I think I won a little over 6K pot, 2.5 one time. Dude, these Harrah's NOLA games used to get they would get literally out of control.
What was the buy-in?
It was a 2.5, but man, people would sit 3, 4, 5K deep. Like, it was nothing in these games because there was no max.
And that's what's happening with Owen's home games right now.
Well, and the thing too, the New Orleans situation was unique because that was the only big poker room. And so, like, you know, you go to Vegas and all these celebrities, everybody's got a bunch of different options. Well, New Orleans, you got sporting events, concerts, movies. Everybody's flowing through that poker room. And so you'd get big money.
It is the only casino downtown New Orleans.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
There is no other. Exactly. I was stunned when I went to New Orleans. I thought it would be like gambling halls and, you know, you'd be able to play slot machines everywhere, whatever. No, it's just Harrah's New Orleans and nothing else.
Yeah, well, I played in the poker room at Boomtown on the West Bank or Penn property.
I meant in downtown New Orleans.
Yeah,
of course.
No, you're right. Totally in downtown. And so that poker room would really pop. And I've played some. I remember I lost a freaking like 7 or 8K pot in there one time when the board was like double pay. The board was like king, queen, queen, 4-4. And I had queen jack and called an all in and the dude had pocket kings. Ugh. And it was just like, I thought I was chopping, you know, but I mean, the dude knew I had a queen.
Yeah, I mean, it was king, queen, queen.
4-4. Yeah, I had queen jack.
I mean, I wasn't thinking I'm chopping.
Yeah, I thought I was chopping and I called a 3K shove on the river and he just shows me king's four. Damn. Jeez. I was like, damn, you know, I was like, that one stung. I remember that one real well, but that's probably my biggest cash game. My biggest regrets, the things I did wrong when I lived in New Orleans, 09 to 14. Nate, we talk about this all the time on the show, man, that there's a thing called winner's tilt.
Yep.
And it's like everybody's so hungry when they're starting out and they're building their role. But when you get to a point, I don't know if it's 100K, 150K, it's different for everybody. Mine's was when I got over 100K. Thought I was rich when I had a 100K roll. It's like, I don't have to put in my 40 hours a week in the 2.5 game. I can just go play twice a week and just get out and go to concerts and travel and do whatever. And I just, if you're not hungry and studying, there's a million people that are coming for you.
Yep.
You talk about it all the time. And I got a little lazy and complacent when I went on that big F-tops run. And I think that, and I look back on my New Orleans days, I just didn't spend, I mean, I had some of the best cash games in the country 10 minutes away from me, and I would play 10 or 20 hours instead of 40. Mm-hmm. And but that's just what being young and stupid is, you know?
Yeah, and that, I mean, Jake talks about it all the time. And we say it on the podcast, he spends a ton of time studying because he wants to continue living, you know, a carefree, not carefree, but like if he stops studying and he gets complacent, he knows like other people will get better. And then that's less money into his pocket. So he doesn't ever want to have to get a real job. He wants to continue to play poker. But the only way to do that is to continually study and stay up to date on the game because so many people are trying to get better all the time.
And people are coming for you. And then like I look at just even working at Barstool, like looking at Dave Portnoy, it amazes me how driven he still
is. It's very similar. Yes.
Yeah. It's like, because I would get to a point in poker, you know, I remember I think the most I ever had was 150K. And I was like, oh, I can just enjoy life now, blah, blah, blah. And like, you see how driven he is when he's worth $100 million.
Yeah.
It's very admirable.
I do. Me and Smitty have discussed that. There's a lot of overlap between the poker grind and like the blogging grind. And mm-hmm. for sure. Another question from Instagram.
Yeah,
this one is. This is just like a fun one, and we can go around the room and answer this one. This one's from Reed. What's your favorite starting hand in Hold'em, but not like aces, like just like a fun one that you just.
I have a guarantee one. Mine's is 10-7 suited. Negreanu was always 10-7 offsuit because you can make a flush both ways. I was 10-7 suited, but like. I know this is so stupid because I don't believe in superstitions and all that. And I'm about to contradict everything I'm saying. I don't believe. But man, I'll like 3-bet 10-7 suited in spots where like you think I have jacks or queens and the flop will just come 7-7-3 or 8-6-2 with two to my straight flush. I mean, I just piss on flops with this hand. Like it's like so it doesn't make any sense. I'll overplay it and stuff. I'm like, oh, I got this. I know I'm just gonna murder this flop.
That's why we're the best podcast in the world, because we try to be all smart. Then we're just like, every time I have 10-7 sitting, I just shit on that fucking flop.
No, it's crazy. Yeah. But it's like really weird because it's like I've won so many huge pots with it. And so I'll play it strong and it's just like, oh, I know I'm gonna flop huge with this.
Yeah.
It's, it makes no sense and don't try this at home.
Right.
No.
I have a similar one. Yeah. The first time I final tabled that Atlantic City tournament, like probably a decade ago at this point, I went into day two with probably 18 bigs, 20 bigs, and I was in the big blind with queen 10 of clubs and small blind raised. I shoved queen 10 of clubs. He folded and showed an ace, and I took down that pot. And then from there, I won every single hand I basically played that day and made the final table. But without that queen 10 of clubs and just reshoving over his open, none of that would have happened. So I have a soft spot in my heart for the queen 10 of clubs.
The 10-7 thing got so out of hand that like people in the South call that the destroyer. Like people know that that's like my thing. It's like out of control how much I'm like,
Doyle.
Yeah, it was like funny because one of my buddies used to play it strong, like in like tribute to me, and he's like, I never hit the flop.
Sorry,
like,
any suit, or does it have to be one particular suit?
Any suit, okay. But it has to be suited. It can't be off suit.
Well, if you're like, if you're playing that 7-10 suited that strong every time, it's almost like the Deuce 7 game where it's like, does he have aces or 7-10?
Right.
Yeah, so it's like the one thing that's like 2-5% in your range that makes no sense you can show up with.
I mean, I'll never say 10-7 suited ever again. I just have...
Destroyer.
The Destroyer. Yeah.
No, that's good. That's a good Destroyer.
Somebody got one?
Yeah, mine's 6-4, specifically clubs.
Oh, okay. Clubs. 6-4 club guys.
Yeah, 6-4 clubs. I would say again more often than not, but it seems like whenever I have that hand, 5-3-2's coming out and I'm busting some aces, cracking aces. Crack,
download, rate, subscribe.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just whenever I see it, I'm always calling unless it's, you know, for a bet shove. I'm pretty much in the hand. And
I mean, nothing feels better than just recklessly calling a 3-bet out of position and just flopping the world, knowing that you're up against something super, super, super strong.
Especially when you're in deep stack, like the World Series. Yeah. You know, when you start these tournaments with 500 big blinds and you could just peel so wide on
so this, much.
So much. Flop, just because like, you're like, oh, I know he has, I know
second
he has,
hand.
I know he has kings. I'm peeling this jack nine to try to outflop him.
Conversely, did you ever think about like if that situation was reversed, could you have gotten away from the full house over quads?
Never.
So you would have went broke if it was the opposite.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Okay.
I go broke on top pair.
I know, but the main event, you know, when you're that deep stacked,
I wouldn't even have seen a turn. That kid at least saw a turn. Like I would have been all in on the flop for sure. Like I don't know, maybe that deep it would have gone that way, but no, he ended up like folding for like, you know, you start with 50k. I think he ended up folding like with like 7k behind or something like really, really ridiculous like that, and then he was out, you know, like four hands later probably to me. But no, there's no way I would have got rid of that ever, ever, ever. You know, top full house against a turn quads. Like, how ridiculous is that?
Yeah.
He had kings. Like,
somebody said, but sometimes you got to lose, you know?
Owen, you got a hand?
Yeah, I think I was going to say, like a jack nine of diamonds or hearts.
Lovely.
Has to be red, though.
Yeah.
Has to be red.
Has to be red for you.
Spades are clubs, too.
Those are the other two, yeah. You have now mentioned all four suits.
Yeah, I like a lot of hands.
I mean, yeah, like suited gappers like that are just fun to play for sure. The worst is like online when you're not, when you just want to click call on 3-bets, especially if you open and they make it sound like 5.5. And you're like, it's only 3.5 more bigs. And you have like some pretty like queen 10 of hearts. It's like, how could that ever lose? Like queen 10 of hearts shouldn't ever lose. But alas, I've probably lost. That's another good reason to get a HUD, because you can go back and look at your own stats and see like how many big blinds you're losing by playing marginal hands, and kind of like slaps you in the face a little bit. Like I'm losing way too much like playing these marginal hands.
Did I ever tell you the time I I flopped quads against a flopped full house, and I made 12 big blinds on it.
No, it just went check, check.
You were slow playing, and yeah, it was a slow playing contest.
No, I had 12 big blinds, and I shoved on the button pre, and big blind called with queens, and the flop just comes. Did I say I have 5-5?
No, you didn't.
I had 5-5, and big blind had queens. Flop comes out queen 5-5.
Oh wow!
Made like $40.
Double up though.
I have a little rant for this week too. So a lot of people are playing these private games on apps now. That's like a big thing. And I was in one on the Poker with Friends app with some unnamed people from Louisiana. And I wasn't even really winning. I won 1 week. I think I won $1,000. And the next week I was down like 800. And the group decided to boot me out because they quote, don't like playing with professionals. Professional. I've been a professional poker since 2021. I had claimed myself as being a poker pro since 2014, and then I was a broke asshole. The term professional poker player is being tossed around awful, awful lightly. If you're saying I'm a pro, and if you're scared of me in a cash game when I'm up $200 a couple weeks, you're a bunch of bitches.
Wait, do you know these people?
Yes. I don't want to name this, but it was this Louisiana game, and dude, I was telling y'all about it. I was all excited. We've been playing 1-3. Everybody buys it for 600. There was some PLO. And I was just loving playing again. I got the same fever we all have right now. We hadn't played in a long time.
Oh,
and I was loving playing in the cash game because it was like an hour or two here and there because you fit in your lifestyle because we're so busy up here. And every night I was hopping in, and all of a sudden I was in this group chat, and they're like, you've left the conversation. And I text my buddy. I'm like, I didn't leave this conversation. He's like, oh, a couple people said they didn't want pros in this group. Oh, I was like, you're calling me a professional?
Dude, you should have just said they didn't even tell you. They just kicked you out of the conspo.
They kicked me out. Yeah, I mean, y'all are some scared. I know a couple of y'all listen to this podcast. The hell with that.
Hey, wait.
You're afraid.
Wait, they listen.
Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening, but how can you be afraid of me? Literally, I've been a poker pro in 7 freaking years, and I'm not even that good at cash.
And that's also a misconception about professional poker players. Yes.
That just means you don't have a job.
I was considered a poker pro once as well. Exactly. Only because you write that on your tax return form.
Yeah, I mean, that just means you don't have a job. Yeah. You know, that doesn't mean you're good if you're a pro. I mean, that just means you're just, I don't know. I just couldn't believe it when they kicked me out. Especially when, people like the Barstool thing.
And it's also like a 1-3 game. It's not like you're playing, you're not like some
No.
Pro in some high stakes game.
And also, he wasn't cleaning them out.
No.
I wasn't even cleaning them out. Yeah. I mean, I was literally like, dude, I'm still pissed about it because I was loving getting play again every night because, like, all four of us, we talk about it all the time, man. We got the freaking fever right now. I mean, even talking about this WSOP, I mean, I'm foaming at the mouth. Why? We're going to play Thursday night, right?
Oh, yeah. Thursday night on Twitch.
Thursday night on Twitch. For Loco
Fridays on Thursday. Exactly. Cash game. The three of us, Owen and Ewan.
Yes.
Owen's in. The four of us.
And Mush will be in. And
Marty
we'll get,
Mush.
And we'll get four others.
I'm in.
TBD.
Love that.
Can we invite White Sox Dave, please?
Oh, White Sox Dave's in.
Yes! 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 I'll be there. Six.
Yeah, so we're going to...
Will we get it in with... What was the hand he got to do with Jack 5? He got in with Jack 5 off pretty once.
Hey.
Buy me back, sweetie.
White Sox Dave is good for the game.
Great beep.
Good for morale.
Great for comedy.
Every Friday. It's fantastic. So that will be on the Barstool Sports Twitch on... Thursday night, if you want to catch that, that'll be fun. Probably do that for a couple hours. I do want to try a sit and go on one of those one time.
I was just going to say, I've set it up on that site, so I'd be able to do it for you guys.
Yeah. This week we have a pretty good crew, so you'll probably keep it cash this week, but maybe the following week we'll try a little sit and go.
Especially because we have to start doing some sort of tournament poker plan.
Figure it out.
Yeah.
The only thing with the sit and goes or tournaments on that is just like, you know, if you get eliminated first, like kind of want you to stick around.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Good point. Kind of a social thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good point. So that look out for that on Twitch. We'll be tweeting out the links to all of that. Let's see if we can get another question.
Yeah. Fire away. I got plenty of
Mr. Mincy.
No lack of things to say here. That's for sure.
I got to go to the school troops.
All right. So Smitty has to jump out because he has to make a huge
major announcement.
Give us a little.
Office is buzzing.
Wait.
This comes out after.
This comes out, you have a couple minutes. By the time this comes out, this announcement will be out there. So first question, the rumors have been circulating. Is it even confirmed that what we all think it is what's about to be announced?
No.
A
Okay, so it's all conjecture. Okay. And to be frank, I didn't know about it until after I was asked to color commentate.
Right, so Hank has been in the lab.
Hank knows what he's doing.
Okay, got it.
I think Hank and CBS have been talking.
CBS.
I'm not even involved in
CBS
this.
CBS is coming back for this one.
Let's do this.
Also, this is audio, but you are smiling.
I'm smiling.
I'm just happy.
You look like a cartoon character who just like saw, like you're like, you have the Aruga eyes, like big smile, heart's pounding out of your chest. You have never been this excited for anything, I think, in your entire life.
I'm just happy that everybody is allegedly going to be happy if this is true.
Got it.
Oh, I think there's going to be.
Well, the only people or company that isn't going to be happy is Barstool Sports, because how can you lose?
Right. And
such top tier.
Well, yes. How is irreplaceable replaceable?
No. Exactly. Put it that way. So go watch Stool Streams. I'm sure if you follow Barstool, you'll see it all over Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
If not, you know.
This is going to be a hard one to miss.
It's funny because like Stool Stream stuff, like it stuff does get like pumped up a lot, and maybe it doesn't like amount to exactly like what
we'll see.
This is probably
raw excitement.
Yes, this should probably be broadcasted like above. Like, Penn should put out a newsletter about this.
So, Smitty, go in there, have a great time. and if it's not what we think it is, we'll just have to take all that. Watch it just be nothing. But it's totally.
Oh, it's something. It's something for sure.
Let's see. So here's a question for you, Ben Mintz. We get this question a lot. Thank you, Smitty, for not shutting the door on your way out. He's so excited. Have you ever been
saved? He was skipping.
He clicked his heels as he turned the corner.
That was so cute.
It's just nice to see him happy, you know?
It really is.
Have you ever been staked? Have you ever staked someone or been staked yourself?
Oh, wow. Yes. And this is a rabbit hole.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that. Like,
you want me, the story of me being backed or me backing
you? Backing people.
Okay. So we had a stable. First of all, when you're young, you think a lot of what's a lot of money versus what's really a lot of money is different. So when I had my roll up to like, I don't know, 50 to 100K, I thought I was rich. So I just started backing a lot of people.
Okay.
And I think we had a crew, me and a partner of mine who I'll remain nameless in this because I don't think he'd want his name out on this. So a partner of mine and I, we had a crew. It was a lot of the old Bodog guys. A lot of the old school Bodog crew was part of it. And we were backing people, some live and some on Full Tilt. And man, the swings we'd have on Sunday, I mean, I had the 50 or 100K roll, and dude, I'd have over half my roll in play every Sunday and not like think anything of it because my money management was so poor.
Right.
But it was living on the edge. And then eventually I realized I was down to like, I like went through one day. I was like, holy shit, I'm down to like $8,000 or $10,000.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I sold out a percent of the makeup. These guys were down at like a big discount and got like $20K back of it. And I got out of it. But my advice would be, on that, don't get into the staking game. Worry about yourself playing.
Yep.
Play higher yourself if you want. Mm-hmm. You know, I know maybe if you do want to get into it, have it be one person you totally trust. Yeah. But like, it's so easy. Like when you start winning in poker, it's like intoxicating, and you just think it's so easy when you get hot. But like, it's not. Mm-hmm. And I highly advise staying out of the staking game. It's tough. It's a tough deal. But I've also been backed. And this didn't go great either. I got over 100K of makeup one time, Nate, playing events around, like just playing all these mains and this. And
So that can add up quick if you're traveling the circuit playing.
You think it's like insane, but if you're playing $3,500 WPTs and you put two barrels in them, you know, and then you run around playing like $1,700 main, dude, you can get down 80 or 100K. So you think it's like, it sounds like so big. Mm-hmm. But it's really not. I mean, let's say you go to a World Series circuit stop and you play every event and you brick, you're down like 20K.
Yeah.
You know, if you play the four, I mean, it adds up so, so fast. And the thing is, when you're backed and you get down 80 or 100K, it affects your mindset. Like, for example, we were talking, I posted about me winning that 1K at IP 2012 when I won 30K. To the outside world, it's like, damn. Congrats, Mitch, you won $30,000. Well, I was 40K in makeup, and that knocked it to 10.
Yeah.
Because it was after Joe Chung broke my heart in the WSOP. And so, like, I literally didn't get a penny when I won 30K because it was all makeup. And so that's the thing. To the outside world, it's so different when you're actually playing the circuit when you're back, because It's just, it's impossible. It affects so much, man. You get down 50, 60K, and you're on the bubble of a $1,700 tournament, and you're like, cashing in a main event for 2,500 or 3K is important, but when you're down 50 or 60K, you feel lost. And so then you bluff it off, and you just go for it, because you're just trying to win at all costs.
The best backers are those who have very good relationships with their horses, and say you're down, you know, 50K in makeup, and you bink something, and you don't get a penny of it. I know some backers who will be like, take 5K for yourself. Like, you know, good job. You've earned it. That stays into makeup, but you also got to put money in your pocket.
So
you can pay the bills and not have to just be super, super stressed about where, you know, like I'm still buried and I don't have any money. I mean, I haven't had any income in months.
I mean, that's smart. Because like you said, your horse is never going to be like racing at the highest level if he's just drowning.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, like, but I don't look back and say anything negative about my guys. I was an idiot. And I admit this. Mm-hmm. I made a lot of stupid decisions in my life. And when I was young, I had an ego. Like so many people in poker have egos. I thought I was too good to play 1-2 or 1-3 no limit. I would skip. Like when I would got up there, I was like, oh, I don't need to play this $300 or $400 daily tournament. Like, who the hell do I think I was? You know? And so I feel bad for them because I should have been grinding way, way harder and had a better attitude and not, and I was boozing and partying a lot then too. And so, you know, I look back on that. I mean, I've learned a lot. That's the difference between being 38 and 28. Mm-hmm. But I just really, you know, I look back on how stupid I was when I was a kid, and I don't blame anything on my backers. I feel bad that I didn't do better for them.
That's the point of it all.
On episode 85, we had on Jordan Drummond, and he's the founder of BBZ Poker.
Okay.
And he's one of the best tournament players in the world, but he spends a ton of his time coaching and running a big, big, big stable. And he talked to us in depth about how he got into backing and what he looks for in horses. He has he runs like a very tight ship where everybody that he backs, he also coaches. And he puts a ton of time into making his stable like just as good at poker as possible. Because, you know, if they're good, a lot of money's rolling into his bank account without him having to actually play poker. And one of the more fascinating things was like, I mean, you're already super good at poker. Why did you put all this added stress on your life? Yeah, he must have, you know, he has a ton of horses with, I would guess, over $1 million swinging each way, like any given WSOP. And it's just like a really fascinating look into his brain and how he got into backing. So if people are interested in the world of staking and backing and stables and that stuff, give episode 85 a listen. Jake Toole, our co-host who couldn't make it in today because of just other shit going on. When he was young, coming up in the game, him and a buddy of his, they decided, let's start backing people online. And this is when Jake was winning F-tops and was...
Yeah, I remember that. You know, I used to play with him. Yeah, he was one of the best.
He was... absolute crusher. Yeah. He still is, but
no,
like,
I know. Just, PSU tennis 11 on full tilt. Yeah. Serious account.
So him and a buddy, they were winning everything. They never thought it would dry up. Obviously it's like, they just never thought there would be a day you couldn't hop on, play the 162 nightly with 30K for first. So they had all the money and they decided to start backing people. And Jake, he took a big beat. Like he didn't get scammed completely, but he lost a little bit of money scamming, but he lost most money just horses were playing too high a stakes.
Yeah.
And they lost, you know, mid six figs.
Tournament poker.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to mention too, that when you're staked, a big mistake too, it's like everybody wants, like, oh man, I want to get this backer so I can play higher. Play on your own damn money and saddle. If you want to play a 1700 main, then go win a $250 freaking mega, bro.
Yeah.
Because so much of the value, satellites and megas are always really soft competition. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, say you want to get the 1700 main, you get in through a mega. Well, then if you cash the 1700 main for 3K, you made a score. You just turn 250 into 3K on your own money and you ain't got to split it. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times you invariably, when you get back, you're playing higher than you should.
Yeah.
And it just seems, it's like it's an illusion. Like you'd rather grind softer 300 or 400s with 100% of yourself than play tougher main events for 50. And when you get in the makeup,
the hardest.
And so I feel like it's a lesson I learned.
Every poker player thinks they're the best poker player. And it's, you get a quick ego check when you play above where you should be playing, and you have to be able to realize, like, oh, it's not all variance, it's not bad luck, I'm just not good enough. And I, you know, that's a hard pill for me to swallow because I am bad at poker, but I hate playing low stakes. I want to be with the best. I want to be battling.
Yeah, and you want it to matter to you. It's got to matter,
right?
To
you. And so, but you have to be able to put that aside, especially if you're coming up in the game and you're grinding. You want to build a bankroll. keep playing lower than you actually want to until you have that bankroll. If you're good enough, you'll beat these low stakes games continually. And then you can start taking shots. Then you can start taking calculated risk.
And I reiterate, you can just satellite. You can satellite in. And that's the mega satellite system is unbelievable.
That's part of the grind as well. That's part of bankroll management and all of that. You want to take a shot? Well, play a satellite. You don't win the satellite.
Then don't play the
fucking main. Then you don't get to play the main. But next time, you know, you'll keep grinding. If you want to be a successful poker player, bankroll management, study the game, low risk, and then take a shot where it's calculated and you think that you have an edge on the
basically
game.
Everything I did not do.
And me as well. And me as well. And most of us. I mean, it takes a ton of discipline to be a successful poker player. I've told this story before, but Jason Kuhn, when we talked to him, he said
he's a world beater.
I mean, which I was going to plug anyway when you were plugging episode 85. Episode 79, nearly 2 hours with Jason Kuhn. Unbelievable. I've listened like three or four times.
He's the absolute man. Oh, and it was so telling when he said that he wanted to take on a bunch of students, and he's talking about high stakes regs he took on as students, and he cut all of them besides one because he didn't feel they were committed enough. And we're talking about guys who absolutely crush high stakes poker. And to be Jason Kuhn was like, no, these guys aren't studying hard enough. They're not on the level I want them to be.
And I mean, he's on to working out. I mean, he takes it to like not just poker. Yeah. I mean, it's optimal brain.
Yep.
You know, getting in good shape. Every you know, so much respect for him.
He's the best. What episode is that? 79?
79.
We should get him back on.
Yeah.
Let's get him in Vegas.
I would say before, I mean, he probably is just going to be playing like, you know, 5K, 10K, no limit out in Vegas. He might not want to talk to us.
That's a good point. But I mean, everyone wants to be Tom Dwan, roll out of bed and just crush high stakes. But I mean, if you look, most of them are treating their mind and body like temples 24/7. And like,
I mean, it's Ivy, everything. I just listened to an interview with Ivy. He said he's in like the best like mindset of his life, and he wants to play WSOPs. And he said like he just, you know, he was doing Ben Mintz style, just partying and all that stuff. And he's like, he said he's in his best mindset. So I'm pretty excited. Hopefully he can get some bracelet bets this year and grind the series. Because when Ivy is in the mix.
Oh, yeah. It's like when Tiger Woods is in the mix of golf. Yeah. It's literally like, it's like the same thing. When he's in the mix, the buzz, everybody, you know, your casual poker fans care way more.
Yep.
No, I agree, man. I just doing this podcast is so pumped, man. I know. I'm just like, just getting out to Vegas. Even when I sit down in that 500 reunion, I'm just thinking about that right now. Just, it's so funny. COVID's had this effect on people, but everybody just, all the stuff people took for granted, you know, like even just being able to sit and play a live tourney. I mean, that just sounds incredible
now. I'm stoked.
I think I'm going to do like the real online grind this fall.
So you're going to, in Hoboken?
Yeah.
Let's go.
So you guys can give me some advice along the
way. Yeah, I'm going to like really try and like set up on the jersey. I'm getting my monitor shipped out, and I'm going to get on the jersey sites in the next couple of weeks. The thing is, football season, I'm going to try to play like Tuesday and Wednesday nights. Football season's about to get real, real wild. But
yeah, my favorite thing in the world is just laptop, little hungover, ordering food, football on TV, playing a couple tables. Just
I was going to say, playing like a 5-hour late reg during a Saturday football, like
nothing.
You're almost, because you're nice and occupated by the game, so you're not overplaying hands. You can sit and play tight, and like it's not bad.
It is the fact that you can't just like toss a couple dollars onto PokerStars drives me insane. Just legalize online poker, you fucking idiots. It drives me fucking bonkers. I can't believe we live in a world without legalized online poker. But that all being said, this has been episode 97. Smitty, Ben Mintz, Owen, myself. We do episodes every Tuesday. We have merch in the Barstool Sports store. We're on Spotify, iTunes, all that good stuff. So tell a friend, leave reviews, 5 stars, subscribe, all that fun stuff. Follow Ben Mintz on Twitter and Instagram. Catch Stool Streams for Smitty's big announcement. And
Thursday Night Poker.
Thursday Night Poker on Twitch. WSOP a month from today. A lot of exciting things moving forward. Owen, take us home.
Thank you guys for listening. Excited stuff coming.